Hey guys, welcome back to Simply You. Be here, be real, be you with Carly Basham. Thank you all so much again for tuning in today. I hope you all have had a fantastic Sunday. Today we have such a special guest coming on the show today. We have the legend, Dan Metzke, the head coach for Louisville Volleyball. A little bit about Dan. He spent 8 seasons from 2017 to 2024 as Louisville's associate head volleyball coach and was named the head coach of Louisville on January 31st, 2025, which, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you. That is a huge deal.
And I'm so excited to see the next era of Dan Metzke. I'm excited, of course. You also became the 8th head coach in program history after a stint as the associate head coach that saw the Cards earn a pair of national runner-up finishes, 3 national semifinal appearances, and also won 4 ACC titles consecutively, too. That's huge. Like legendary, dude.
Dude's fine. As you're talking through that, I know you had Ron here. I was like, this must have been 4 pages for Ron.
He would never get through it. No, when I tell you, there was literally 3 pages,
and I
literally sat him down, and then I was like, just highlight what you want me to say.
I'm sitting in the legend seat.
You are. I love him. And also, one thing that is huge, too, is that Metzke was named the ABCA Assistant Coach of the Year during the 2022 season, becoming the first male ever to win that award.
Yeah, I guess. You know, I think that didn't Washington State's coach win it, though? But what's his first name?
Burdette.
I think Burdette won it, but people look at his first name, Burdette, and they don't assume the coach. Because you won it like 10 years ago. I'm pretty sure. I have to ask him because I've seen that stat a bunch of times.
Yes.
But then I looked through there and I think that Burdette won it. I was going to say, I've seen that like written a lot and I was like, I swear that he won it. So if he hasn't won it, then yes, maybe I'll be the first male to win it. But the Assistant Coach of the Year award to me always looked like, it's almost like a year two award. Like I think I won it in 2022. Danny won National Coach of the Year, Head Coach of the Year 21. And then we were also good in 22. And it's always kind of been like that. It's like, your team has a great year. Then the next year, you're good. That's when the assistant coach gets the award. But yeah, there were about 30 players involved in me being, you know, lucky enough to get that award. There was 2 seasons worth of players for sure.
And that's very interesting to even think about how, like, it literally probably took 2 years to earn that award.
That seems like how it's been going.
That's interesting. I love that. And in his 8th season at Nebraska, the Huskers compiled a record of 216-44 wins and won 3 Big 12 championships, a Big 10 championship, and made eight NCAA tournament appearances. Metzke also helped oversee the inauguration and emergence of the Huskers saying volleyball.
Oh, right, but some of the stuff I forgot. I must say
you're doing a blast from the past.
That's true. They still have that beach program. And what happened back in the day was,
I'm trying to get your full journey.
Beach volleyball was an emerging sport, and the ABCA would give your program, if you started it, if you did a full year of beach volleyball, at the end of that year, they'd give your program $100,000. So that's what they do to build up sports. And so I had to write a proposal to the athletic department to do 2 seasons of beach volleyball for $50,000, because year one, we would have to pay out of pocket. After year one, we get $100,000. And then year two, we would have $50,000 left over. Mm-hmm. So I think we ended up going over budget, but we had to go. And because we had no one to play, to be a beach volleyball varsity team, you have to play 10 matches. So we flew out to Hawaii on like a Saturday, and we played pretty much matches every single day for like 9 days and then flew back. We did our whole season in a spring, and now they still have that program and there's more teams around for them to play. Yeah. But our season was literally probably 3 weeks long, where everybody else was going, you know, 3 months.
But we just wanted
an opportunity to train our players more and just kind of have access, because it's opened up quite a bit for indoor. But back then you didn't have much access at all in the spring. So if we had a beach team, then we could train our team all year.
That's very interesting too.
It's interesting to me that they still have that team. So I don't know why Daska has a beach volleyball.
I'll see them train during the spring and like they'll be on like their sand volleyball courts. And it's like, yes. I mean, hey, they have the facility.
They always have great ball control. So that's something
they said. Always. And that's where too, I think there's a different level whenever you train in sand too, just because it, like, you have to be able to teach your body to have that control. Because it's like on the court, you can almost like fly around, and then it's just like, you, like a good touch behind it. Or it's like, if you just have like the good push off, it's going to end up working. But like in sand, you have to have the dynamics.
I love sand volleyball. I wish I could still play. My kids are 10, 8, and 6. My goal is when they can actually play a little bit, maybe I have another season or two up for Bell. So
yes.
I might come back out of retirement.
I'm about to say Dan Metzke in the flesh at the sand volleyball.
Sookie in my mid-40s. Everybody can get me.
I'm excited. I would just say, Have you ever played in the like sands volleyball tournaments?
So
that's like the beer leagues. There's a big beer.
It was so the grass is really big here, which I didn't realize until I'm roofed here. So we always are involved at Brightside and like we help out. I think like the mayor's team or something like that. But since I moved here, which man, I was probably in my mid 30s, but I haven't played very much beach or grass or anything like that. Todd Chamberlain, my younger male on staff, he's about 2-3 years younger than me. He's played more recently, but I think he's even hung it up.
Guys are good. Like these guys in their 20s, they're good. It's hard to hang.
Yeah, they are good. And also, just like about the grass volleyball, never knew that it was a thing until I came back from Washington.
Huge around here.
Huge. Yeah. I'm like, there's even like the grass volleyball tournaments, like the spring and summer.
So the Wapaka Boat Ride is probably the biggest one. It's in Wisconsin. And in my prime, I played in that tournament and we got third. And it was like, it's a huge tournament. I remember it's like old school scoring 15. It's 3-on-3 on a sand court, on a grass court. You played on a golf course, but there are all these crummy net systems, so they kind of sag in the middle. So everybody runs two balls up the middle. But it was like, I mean, this is a massive. The whole 18 holes worth of volleyball courts, all that. We got third, and I remember at that time I was like 22, and we got like $1,500 a piece, and it was like,
that's huge.
I was like, I might not even work for the year.
He just won the lottery.
I think I was done playing at the time. I don't think the NCAA would care if I was still playing, but I think I was done playing with them. That was back when if an NCAA player played, because I remember on the women's side, there was like a current Wisconsin Badger or whatever won it, and she couldn't take any of the money. She probably would have won like $3,000, but that was back before NIL and all that. You couldn't accept anything.
Right.
So yeah, $1,500 was a big deal.
Big deal. That
third place, I was like, geez.
That gets you wondering, how much they paid the first place?
I know. I don't know. I've never been.
Poor day I'd ever come.
I might be retired had I won that tournament.
No, literally, you might have just said, all right.
I know. Just put it in Bitcoin. I would be done.
Anyways, all that being said, Dan, your name speaks for itself. Your history, what you've done, and just even the sport of volleyball speaks for itself. So just seriously, thank you so much just for being here. It's an honor.
Appreciate it.
Of course. I want to kind of get into several different topics with you just for us to talk about. But I kind of just went through your journey as a coach in general. But can you kind of get into how you found your voice as a coach and realize how you could actually make an impact? I think especially just with how big that you've been able to grow your own social media and with, you know, like your personal podcast. I feel like you've really been a great figure for the sport of volleyball, as well as just try to utilize your voice to make an impact too. So just kind of, could you just kind of get into, I guess, how you found your voice? And
that's a great question. So finding your voice is like, I think you're always still finding it. So for me, I'm still refining my communication style. I also think like each generation is different. Each player is different. Each recruiting class is different. Like they all have their own personality. So I still think I'm refining that, but I wouldn't call it finding my voice, but for me, like finding my identity as a coach was like really big when I realized that like confidence is everything. Mm-hmm. And like, however I communicate with athletes, if it's not increasing their confidence, then it's not really worthwhile for me to say. Mm-hmm. And that took me like a long time to figure out where like as coaching, and I watch this with my kids with youth sports, it's like, especially new coaches, if I'm a new coach, the first thing I want to do is like correct. I want what are they doing wrong? Let me correct it. What are they doing wrong? Let me correct it. Oh, we need to change that. As opposed to like, you know, there's 40% of this is going well. Like, let's really kind of celebrate that and spend our time reinforcing that. Because what you appreciates, gets bigger.
100%.
And so for me, that was a really big thing of like finding my identity as a coach was just like literally 100% of my communication should always build confidence. Now, there's still opportunities to correct and, you know, fine tune things. But like weaving those in a way that it's always constructive. And I mean, the worst thing is when you lose an athlete and they shut down or you kind of cross a line with an athlete from a communication standpoint where no matter what you say, they've already tuned you out.
Right.
And that line, it's like once you cross that line, it's hard to come back from. So, I you know, when I was a younger coach too, I always kind of left with the thought of like leave them wanting more as opposed to with coaches. Sometimes we want to think like, just make sure, even if we covered too much, just make sure we covered it. And it's like, maybe I only covered 80% of what was important, but it's better than me doing 110 and grinding them.
Yeah. Just, right.
And nobody looks forward to coming back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, leave them wanting more. I think that's something that like, it's hard as a coach to feel like, maybe we could have done a little more. Maybe I could have said a little more, but it's like doing that consistently as opposed to just every once in a while going over the line, in my opinion, is way more efficient. Because the nice thing is in college, we have so much time with our athletes. Some of these athletes we have for 5-6 years, we've got them 5-6 days a week for most of the year. Like we have a lot of time to grow together. So if I'm grinding and you know, like I said, we kind of cross a line where you're just kind of ready to tune me out. It's like, I'm back tomorrow and I'm back the next day.
Right.
It's like, you can't go there and get
no,
your own.
You can't. Well, first off, that I love that approach too. That is awesome. And I think if you can coach your team in a way that can give them confidence, that's just going to make their skills even like better. And just because I feel like if you as a coach can give them confidence, even if they aren't seeing the result that they want, they're still going to have the confidence to keep trying and just to keep going for it. And I feel like, especially just like in the sport of volleyball, which is how much it's growing and like how much that even like the skill sets are changing. I mean, like we even have like the split set now, like, you know, the serve receive and everything. And I think,
it's like all anybody knows is split set though. Like I have this neighbor.
That's all Ron.
Oh my God. I had this neighbor whose kid was like just starting volleyball and it must have been like his social media just got blasted with that. And he's like, well, what about this split step? And I'm like, your kid can't even pass the ball. I think we're thinking about split stepping. Like they can't serve it over the net yet. Don't worry about it. I hear the split step a lot, which I like in a lot of different things. We split step with our block. Mm-hmm. We do it a little bit on top spin serves, whatever. But that's so funny. It's like, it's almost like if you don't know anything about volleyball, that's what your social media is flooded with. Just like split step.
No, literally. And kind of side note, but I train the bros at Kiva.
Okay.
From like 14s up until like their 18s team, but like their red teams basically. And Ron, he got above him, goes the beginning of it. He was like, all right, Carly, this split step on serve receive. Watch it.
He's ready for it.
And I was like, all right, Ron, I got you. But then I can't wait to meet these 14-year-olds. And they're so good. But it was like, they're like, clap for me to somewhere first. And then I was like, Ron, okay, but like the split step isn't gonna work if they're still sizing the platform. I was like, we need to kind of slow things down a little bit. And he was like, well, Carly, like I'm just seeing, you know, like the top programs are new in it. And I was like, okay, like your girls will get there.
I don't know. It's always interesting too, because it's like whatever the top players do, people try to mimic.
Yes.
But like Elena Scott for us was obviously like, you know, generational talent. Mm-hmm. And she would use it here and there, but she was just so smooth with her movement. Molly Sauer was one too that when we got here she was already the bro, and she's one of the best passers I've ever seen, and she would use it sometimes, not use it other times, but it was more of just like the feel for the game.
Oh, you know, awesome. Well, that's where, sorry about
no you go ahead.
Well, that's where I feel like even that can even relate to just giving them confidence too, because I feel like if you go into it having your players think that they can only play like a certain way or think that they can only like move a certain way and stuff like that.
It's a great point.
It's going to make them feel so limited, you know, and it's, and it's not going to let them play free. And I'm a firm believer, like your players play the best whenever they're not thinking too much. They're just in their flow state. You know, if that was something like I always tried to make sure that I was in was like my flow state, just because the more that I found myself thinking, the worse it ended up getting, you know? And I think that's just whenever you go back to just trusting your training. But you can't feel that flow, and it's like you can't feel that freeness of playing if you don't have the confidence to be able to move how you want to too. Because even I feel like as coaches, like it's your job to be able to, you know, like correct the talent and or like not the talent, but like correct the technique with it and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's like each player plays differently. You know, it's like each player has their own way of playing. They have their own personality on the court and everything like that. And I think if you learn how to embrace that, but also trying to just correct like the few small details of it, that's going to make them feel so confident.
So I had two things on that you covered. One is when you talk about players, and I hate giving Kentucky credit because she's a coach of Kentucky now, but Amaya Tillman was a legend for us in the middle. And she taught me a lot about, and I thought I knew a lot about training middles at the time, but like, she taught me a lot about eye work and like, hey, this is what I saw there. And as opposed to just me being like, you should look at this and that's how you're going to get the result. Mm-hmm. She would say like, well, here's what I saw. And there's a play that sticks out in particular. We were playing Nebraska in 2021 at their place. We swept them and she blocked this ball, I think against the current pro, I think a kid who plays at Omaha right now. But it was like a block where it was everything you don't train as a blocker. Mm-hmm. It was, she reached away from the hitter. She reached up. She wasn't over the net, but the player hit a high, you know, it was a high deep shot and she ended up blocking it like 2 feet above the net. It went way back to the end line. We call those Amaya blocks now because she had so many. And I remember watching film with her and I was like, what were you watching here? Like, why would you do that? And she was like, well, at the last second I saw the hitter's eye and it felt like she was going to hit that shot. And I was like, I'd never heard anybody say that before. It's always a ball setter, ball keeper. Mm-hmm. And I'm just watching the hitter. I'm not watching the hitter's eyes, but it was like, that got me to think like, man, she's seeing the game in such a different level.
Yes.
But you talk about the flow state too. I did my master's thesis on flow, which is like your challenges versus your abilities. And when those meet, that's when you get to a flow state. And then when you're talking about, I always think too, is like, there's the challenge of what you're doing, but there's also the perceived challenge. And the more things we put of like, I need a split step, I need to be here, I need to do that. If you, the more you put on your checklist, the harder the challenges are. Like, so it's harder to get the flow.
Right.
But if you just have one or two things, then the challenges are easier and it catches up to your ability. And that's when you find yourself in a flow state. And that's what I say, oh, when I'm playing great, I'm not thinking.
Yeah.
Because you're not going through a checklist of 10 things.
That makes so much sense.
Playing.
You're, oh my gosh. And I love that you did your thesis on that too. That's so
it was really random when you brought that up. I hadn't thought about it in years, but yeah.
Was, the past.
I know I was in leadership development. I did my master's in Nebraska as a graduate assistant.
That's awesome.
But then there's this book called Flow, and jumping off of that, I did kind of like a, you know, connection to volleyball and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like, it's so true though, even because I think whenever, I mean, like just based on my own experience too, whenever I'll even be like in practices or even like in games and stuff, the more that I found myself thinking about, okay, like pushing my outside shoulder more forward or trying to feel that dip in my side or trying to push off my left foot to get there, like that was whenever I was completely losing even like what I was there to do. And like that was to compete, that was to bring my drive, that was to bring my passion. And it was like I was so, it just seemed like I was focused on like the wrong things, quote unquote, which it was like, not that not that necessarily focusing on your technique is wrong, but I think that whenever you get into those game time situations, that's whenever you just have to be able to trust your training and trust that you're coaches and just be able to trust that if you are doing something wrong, my coaches are going to correct me too. Yeah. But just like be able to do it in like a good way too, I think is
well, like the situation you're describing, it's like if you think of your best, and you could think about this in any business, family life, whatever, just like when you're in flow, when you're in that state where it's just like life's happening for you and not to you,
yes.
Like just you're not thinking, there's a, you think, okay, what am I thinking about that moment? I don't know, I'm just reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like when we're struggling, we have a tendency to think like, oh, I want to be in this flow state, so I'm going to think about my left hand, or I'm going to think about, but it's like when you put yourself back there, it's like you didn't get into that state by thinking about those things.
Right.
So it's a really hard thing, but again, the more we put on our plate, the harder it is to get into that state.
Say. And I think it all just goes back to just keeping it simple. You know, like I feel like especially just as you try to achieve bigger and greater things, it can seem like you have so much more to do, or it's like it just seems like you just have to do so much more than what you are doing. And then I think if you just go back and be like, okay, no, like what got me here? My personality, my drive, my work ethic, like all of those intangible things that it's not necessarily you have to change, you just have to be consistent like that too, I think, to see those results.
For sure.
But I think in those big moments, we either go back to either not using our training and trying to change something, which then I think affects the result of it, or if you do tap into that flow state and even tap into like the frequency of it too, you know, like you even talked about stuff happening for you and not to you. So I think that also can go with to just like the state of like vibrations that you're even bringing to, which I mean, like that can come from like your mindset, even it just how you even go into, you know, those games or like those practices, or even, you know, like if you are starting like your own business or something, just going into it with the intention of knowing that you're going to be successful or knowing that you're going to learn, but not being afraid to fail either.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the fear of failure can hold so much of us back.
I totally agree.
And it can like, and it's just so crazy of how much the fear of failure can stand in some of the most successful people's ways, just because they're just afraid of like not going for it. But just based off the last point, just like about the flow state too, Magda, the middle that I had at Washington State, she's a legend. I mean, she's insane. But it was funny because we would get in games and it was actually one of her best games. She got like 12 blocks in like a 3-set match. It was crazy. But there was this one timeout, Burdette, actually, he was like, what are you doing? And she was like,
I don't even know.
And she was like, I literally don't know. She was like, I'm just playing. And he was like, well, just keep doing it. Because, and it was just funny because at that time, like we had like our entire like game plan and like our scouting report and everything like that. And just what we saw was just completely different from that. So then like it just got down to her having just to like trust her eyes and just like trust like what she thought was good. And I mean, it was the best match that she's ever had.
Well, we prep, we do the same thing where it's like we go over the scout, all that. Well, we just say block what you see, then what you know, not the other way around. So it's like sometimes you get, again, it's the same thing of just too much on your checklist.
Yeah.
It's just like you just need to kind of play. And then in the back of your mind, here's some things we think might happen. But you're not going to play your best when you're thinking like, well, you told me that this was going to happen. It's like, well, what do you actually see? Yeah. So that's a tough kind of dance.
100%. But I think that that also can just tie into having that confidence too, just to be able to trust your eyes too. You know, it's like knowing that you have a game plan going into it, but knowing also that whenever you step onto the court, it's just game time then. Like, it's just play free for all. And then if you all do need to adjust, that's whenever the coaching staff can come in and just trust that they're going to guide you to make those adjustments too.
I'm sure it's huge.
Love that. Ooh, what do you think makes a successful coach? I feel like you've been around a lot of successful coaches and now you are becoming a very successful coach, but
yeah,
can you just kind of get into that?
I haven't thought about that in a while. To me, the first thing that came to mind was like humility. Cause I think as a coach, it's like my personal favorite leadership style is just like servant leadership. So for me, when I see like young coaches, I don't know why, like for me, an example that comes to mind is like when we run camp in the summer, we bring in 200-300 kids. We cater lunch, so we bring like Chick-fil-A in, and we talk to them, hey, we love our arena, it's the best arena in the world, you know, treat it with respect, keep it clean, no matter what, at the end of the day, it's trash. And it's like the coaches that we bring in that like afterwards are just kind of grabbing trash and just kind of keeping the place nice, those are the people. That's like such a small thing, but it's like small things become big things. Like how you do one thing is how you do everything. And to me, those are like little things where I'm just like, this is somebody who's going to be really successful because like they care about the small things. So I don't know, the first thing that comes to mind of like a great coach is humility. And then, you know, I think that the easiest answer a lot of people would give is just that, you know, a commitment to learning, because you really do have to in any, and that's in any business, any sport, anything like that. Like if you're not constantly striving to learn, you're falling behind. Before we recorded, we were talking about AI. It's like for us in our volleyball program, we're trying to figure out how AI kind of fits into our program. We've talked about, you know, we have, did you guys wear catapults when you play it?
Yeah.
So, you know, catapults are going to give you like a total output for each athlete. We've got obviously our practice plans. We've got our strength conditioning. Well, we can put all that into AI and then we can kind of get more of a snapshot of what our player's experience is going to be. Hey, we had the best week ever, February 12th. It's like, what were we doing? And then it's like, you've got an AI 2 seconds that's going to let you know what you were doing right before that, what you were doing after that, and then what that actually was. So for us, we're trying to figure out how we can kind of incorporate that more. And like we said, you're not going to be able to replace the relationships, replace the conversations, replace the learning and growing that happens like that. But if we can streamline some of that other stuff, it's like, why not? It frees us up for more things. So humility, constantly trying to learn.
Love those. And I think I have a couple of things to say about both, but just regarding humility first, that is one of the most important factors and qualities that any person can have in their life. Just because I think that you can't learn and you can't grow unless you have humility, bro. And I feel like those things kind of play with each other, just because in order to learn and grow, you have to admit that you don't know everything. You have to learn that there are people up there who might be doing things, you know, like a bit better than you. There might be people out there who's doing things at a faster pace than you, or who just know more like about what you're trying to do. And I think if you truly invest and commit to learning and growing, you have to kind of strip away your ego and be like, I want to like almost like submit to not melling. You know, it's like submitting to the unknown.
We talk sometimes about like, you know, when you get feedback, you have the opportunity to approve or improve. If you get feedback and immediately it's like, well, but, or anything like that, you're just trying to kind of prove, and you might, your reality, you might still be right. But if you're trying to improve, you're open to, okay, what is your perspective on
that?
Do I really need to do that? But what you're talking about too, of you were touching on with humility. Gosh, I couldn't remember where I wanted to go with that.
Fine, take your time.
No. You lost me. Darn it. We're talking about ego. I lost it.
Ego, putting your ego aside. We'll come back.
You lost, but I had it. And I was like, I know, but I got on the prove and improve thing of just like, it is a delicate dance of, oh, I know where I wanted to go with it. It was us. You were talking about how you have to accept that there might be somebody doing something better than you. There might be somebody who knows something better, but like my initial reaction to that was like, there is somebody doing more than you. There is, but the other part of that is like, you need to know that like you're enough. Like that's with our group. A lot of times it's like, you need to understand like what you're doing. Like if you're committing to it, it's enough. Like you are enough as you are. We're striving for more. We want to be better. yeah, there's somebody who can jump higher right now. Yeah, there's somebody who can hit harder. There's somebody who was a higher ranked recruit, but it's like, you're plenty fine in the person that you are. And then if we commit to where we want to go, you know, the sky's the limit for us. But I think that that's always a hard thing of like accepting that, yeah, somebody does know more than you. Yeah, somebody is stronger than you. Yeah, somebody is better than you right now in this metric or whatever it might be. But that's okay. Like, you're enough as you are. And volleyball in particular is an imperfect game. And you don't have to be
a game stakes.
Yeah, you don't have to be better at every single thing to beat a team. It's a true team game. So definitely you are enough. You
know? Yes, 100%. And I think that's where so many of us can just get lost, because we strive just to, you know, get better or to master our crafts. And then it's like we're so focused on trying to either change or just like continue to get better at things. And then it's almost like we can, I mean, like not all the time, but we can lose what got us here too, you know? Yeah. And I think going into those situations, knowing that you can still learn and grow to make yourself better, but also holding on to like the foundation of like why you even got this on the gym, the original Shaylock. But it's like, you didn't get there because you knew what you're like about to learn. You know, it's like you got there because you were yourself, because you brought those intangibles that either they never saw before or that you just carried, that, you know, like, that you just carried almost like better than most people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't thought of this point too until we were talking about it, but it's like, if you take a college athlete, okay, so a volleyball athlete that we get, to get an opportunity to play at Louisville, you have to be pretty special. Mm-hmm. But like the interesting thing about it is like, you at that moment probably aren't enough to take Louisville to the next level. But what you did to get to that is what got you there. Like, like who you are, how you committed to the process, how you improved, that's what got you the opportunity. But where I think some people struggle is like the snapshot of, I'm the 7th ranked recruit or 10th ranked recruit or whatever in the country. So I am really good and I am who I am.
Yes.
And then I get there and all of a sudden it's really hard. And it's really like, it's competitive and I'm not the best anymore. But it's like, you weren't brought on this team because you were going to be the best right away. You were brought on this team because look at how much better you got through your high school career. Mm-hmm. We expect you to do that in college. But, and we might touch on this later, but like with the transfer portal and things like that, transfer is different. The transfer, when they come in as a junior or senior, they are kind of expected of like, hey, you are expected to impact the team immediately. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, the high school recruits, I think sometimes see themselves like that, where it's like, hey, you're bringing me in and here's my impact on the court. And all of a sudden they don't get it right away. And it's like, where's my value? It's like, you were brought in because of where you're going to go, not where you are right
now. Where you're at right now.
Which is hard because it's like, hey, I'm a top recruit and I'm playing in the Under Armour game and I'm doing all these things. Right. And then all of a sudden you get to college and it's like, man, like,
almost like a wake up call.
It's hard too. You have 50 around the team. You're 18 and they're 23. It's right. Like, I mean, if you can play, that's crazy. Like, it is not the norm. It's not the norm to be able to be better than people 5 years older than you, you know?
And especially just, I think, with just like the caliber that Louisville volleyball host in general, it's like, not only are they competing against 23-year-olds, but they're competing against these girls and these athletes who have been in some of the biggest stadiums that have been in the most pressure type of games and situations and stuff like that. So it's like, those things also you have to experience to be able to have the confidence to actually be in those situations too. And I just think, I mean, like, you nailed it right on the head, but you can't have one without the other. It's like, you can't have humility without confidence, but you can't have confidence without humility too. And I think just trying to find that fine line between not being overly confident, where then I think you can start to become a little bit cocky because you don't see where else that you can improve, versus almost being showing too much of humility where you also forget your worth and what got you there too. And I also just love what you said about how we like to bring people on, not because of where they're at, but because of where they could be too. I think that that's also what recruits and even just people in general forget, is that if someone invests in you, they aren't investing in who you are right now. They are investing in where they see that you can go. And I think that can be hard sometimes to grasp, because if we look too far ahead, we lose sight about what we're doing, you know? And I always like to try to live by 1 foot in the present and 1 foot in the future. You know, it's like trying to be like 5 steps ahead, but also trying to be also grounded enough to know where I am and what I can do better right now to get where I want to be too, I think is huge.
I got you.
I did want to touch on, before we get into the transfer portal, because I do want to kind of pick your brain on your thoughts behind that. But I think with Louisville volleyball especially, you know, they are you are known as being such a successful program, but I think more importantly, you are known for y'all's culture, right? I think that people see Football Volleyball and they see such a welcoming and fun and competitive environment, especially with y'all's coaching staff too. You know, I mean, I've even had friends like Brooke Prazier actually. She called me just to kind of keep me updated, and she was just like, I love the Louisville ball, the coaching staff. Like, they're so cool, because she's thinking about getting into coaching as well. Yes,
oh, really?
Yeah. And she was just kind of talking about like the different schools and it's like the different coaching styles that she would like to be a part of. But I think just your old culture in general is just what you are known for. You know, it's like, yes, you all are successful, but I think that it's so rare to find successful programs that have the same level of success in your culture too. Yeah. So can you just kind of touch a little bit on just how you built that and how you also maintain such a strong team culture at Louisville?
Yeah.
This awesome series.
Culture is everything. It's a huge trauma. Thank you.
Of course. I seriously mean that.
Well, so when I think of culture too, though, because people ask us about this a lot, and it's like, how do you maintain it? How do you protect it? And you do have to constantly do that. But for us, it's a really big thing of, for me as a coach, I want to look forward to what I do. And if your culture is not that, you're not going to, like, it's the chicken or the egg, which one comes first? It's like, I'm going to live in a reality where, like, I love coaching everybody that's here. And if that's not true, I'm going to make it that way. And clearly recruiting is a big part of that. And with our recruiting, we've always kind of held to the fact of, like, you're never going to get the perfect recruit that you want, where the personality, the skills, the athleticism, it's all a 10 out of 10. It's going to be a sliding scale. But on the culture side of it, it's like, if there's yellow flags, we'll maybe roll the dice with one player. Mm-hmm. Because for us, we look at peer pressure. If you have a good culture, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because if we got everybody going the right direction and we bring in somebody who's a yellow flag, like, and a yellow flag would be an example, like, I'm talking to a recruit and I go, you know, we always will talk about what's your favorite season, you know, what was whatever. But then if you ask them, hey, what was a team that you really struggled with, or that team that really struggled, what was that like? And a yellow flag would sound like this on the phone. They would say, well, you know, coach didn't really like me. And then the players were kind of mean. And it was clicky. And then my setter was this. And they'll give you 10 things that aren't about them.
I would say that all external back.
Yeah, no ownership whatsoever. Yeah. And that's not a red flag. It's just a yellow flag. Mm-hmm. Because on the phone, we have a hard time communicating what we really are processing. Right. It is what it is. But we'll take like one player like that. I'm like, okay, well, we'll brush that off. It's a yellow flag. People learn. They grow. If we take two players like that and they find each other, all of a sudden, you know, those two now, okay, then we find somebody, we get somebody else, we bring them in the fold. Now we have three. So we'll only take one yellow flag. And if we have the right culture in place, they'll typically fall in line because we're all going the same direction. Mm-hmm. So for us, that's kind of a big thing for culture, is that culture is an absolute non-negotiable. And as we look at our team, we'll look at once every couple of years of like, we're not 100% sure on this player. We can kind of take that player once every other year, maybe once every 3 years, because by the time we've had them here for 2-3 years, we kind of know, okay, this is a player that's going to take up a little bit more of our energy, a little bit more of our time.
Right.
You can't take anybody else until this player is gone. Like, right. That's honestly how they're added. Yeah, it's just like the way that it is. And to, you know, the team's credit, to the staff's credit, we haven't really found ourselves in that situation too often, just because we're so meticulous on front end of like, culture is an absolute, we have to check that box. We have to, the question we ask ourselves is, am I going to be excited to coach this player every single day? That has to be a yes. If that's not a yes, then the recruiting's a no. It's just, we're not going to enjoy what we do. And if we don't enjoy what we do, we won't do it well. And
for me, just gonna,
yeah, it's going to be in everything.
They're not going to want
to. So it's like, it seems like a very simple equation to get there, but it's incredibly hard to stay true to that. Because all of a sudden you're going to have somebody who touches 10-8. And you're not so sure about them academically and socially or whatever. And it's like, yeah, they touch 10-8. So you take them. And then all of a sudden you have another one that's like, man, they're so skilled and they've won everything. And we're not so sure about this part. But, I mean, we can get them. Let's take them. Now you have two. And then two becomes, and all of a sudden it's.
And then it just.
We don't even go down that road if the culture piece isn't there.
I love that. I don't just like. It's like recruit the person first, and then it's like the athlete second almost. Yeah. And I think that that is such a good approach to it too, though, because you can train those skills in volleyball. You know, it's like if they're not at the level with like their serve or with like their serve receive or something, you can train that, you know, like it's like you can have them go in the gym 2 hours extra a day, go through four different ball grips a day to make that skill better. But if you find a person who lives a life of just like selfishness or just has no self-accountability,
yeah,
you can't really fix it, especially just at that age. And then just once they're in that environment too, it's so much harder to try to change how they see things.
They're really hard. And especially if they have a buddy.
Yes.
And if they can find a buddy that has that.
Oh, that's just going to reiterate what they're doing is right.
I heard this at a really young age. And it's like, if you go around, let's say I go through today, right? And I drive home and I talk to my wife the other day. I'm like, man, I drove home and this guy at the intersection, he was didn't let me go. And then I went to Starbucks and this guy I ran into was like taking forever. And I have like 10 people that were miserable throughout the day. Well, I'm the miserable one.
Right.
Like,
and you're the constant.
Yeah. And it's like, so if you constantly are seeing all that, it's like there's got to be some self-reflection that you're the one kind of connector of all of this. But again, when you get two or three people that have those same conversations, mm-hmm. it's just like, man, now we've created this world where, you know, it's anything but me. It's all about these other things we can't control. So again, we'll roll the dice on maybe one player every couple of years just because you don't know.
Right.
And people do grow. And that's kind of the most rewarding thing is to see somebody really come out of their shell or really kind of develop into this great person. But you start getting more than that and it starts to get dicey real quick.
It's dangerous too.
So that's hard for coaches though. If you feel like on the court, they can help you. It's hard to say no when you're like, man, they would upgrade us. Like we know objectively they would upgrade us on the court, but we're not so sure off the court. It's really hard to say no.
And even just with how you say, like, you have a girl who could touch 10A, but if they aren't the right cultural fit, you have to be able to make that tough decision and be like, you won't be, because
or if your culture is perfect, then you can take that player.
Right.
If your culture is great and you feel good about every single player, you can take the one. Mm-hmm. And then you put them in there and peer pressure will usually get them in line. Right. Or you get in trouble is then you got her and you do another and you do another, then you're out.
100%.
Now, and if you already have one, then you can't take her.
Mm-hmm. No, seriously. It's like you pitch your max. Right. It's like you pitch your max of that. But I think that's so cool too, Dan, just that approach, because to me, what I hear too is that you're making a commitment to the rest of your team too, because I feel like the players that you did bring onto this team, they came onto this team because of the Louisville culture, right? Yeah. Like, yes, they want to see they want to see the success and they want to compete at like the highest level, but I feel like Louisville's culture is what brought them there, you know, and like that's what made them invest in the program, you know, and I think by you being that selective, I think that that's also a testimony just of your commitment to your own team now too, because you're saying that like you have to meet the standards that I see is already up. It's huge. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. I have something. Oh, okay. I did want to discuss this a little bit. Just with how big NIL is nowadays and everything too, what could you just kind of share your perspective on the positive impacts that you've seen it have, as well as the negative impacts, if you have seen any negative impacts?
I'm sure there's both. Again, we're a very positive program, a very optimistic person, so I have a tendency to look at like all the good. And I do think NIL came about, for a quick history lesson, it's funny, we were talking about Alexa Hendrickson, you know, she was a player that social media, she really blew up. I think Elena Scott and Hannah DeBeer last couple years did the same type of thing. Those three players, and I'll use Alexa Hendricks as an example, but you know, when she came to Louisville, she couldn't make any money on NIL, and she had a passion for social media and all that, but she's done and made a career out of it. 100%. And then she, you know, was playing for us and was like a DS, and they changed the rules so she could make money on her name and image and likeness, because she was doing a YouTube channel and doing TikTok and all this, and she should be able to take money.
She's bringing in so many.
Well, and she's grinding and she's doing the work. And that's why NIL, that's why that rule kind of came about. Well, football and basketball took that rule and said, oh, look at this. Now I can take the best players and I can pay them to come here through NIL. Mm-hmm. And it's basically pay for play. So the heart of the rule got lost, because Iko Jones comes to mind as well. Iko Jones had a YouTube channel in Jamaica before she came here. When she came here, she had to give up doing all of that. She couldn't make any money on it because of the NIL restrictions. Yeah. I think it was about her junior year, they switched that. Now she can monetize her YouTube channel and all that. But before she even played one point here, and she was a red shirt and grew into our program, it's not like she was getting paid on NIL.
Right.
But she had to give up all that just because of the rules. So the rules were really behind. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, leave it to football and, you know, men's hoops to kind of, ruin that. And so then we had to reel it back. And now we got revenue sharing coming, which I think It's not perfect yet, but it's a good system where it's all going to be through the university now. Mm. Where, you know, when we bring in 10,000 people to the Yum Center, clearly there's a monetary value to that, and our players can get a little bit of a kickback from that, which I think is pretty cool. So
I need to teach.
I see a lot of positives there. I do know there's some programs, like volleyball programs in the country, that are trying to get, because you're trying to get a leg up, and it's like money really does talk. And it's like, man, if I have a lot more money than somebody else, I might be able to lure a recruit that I maybe had no business getting before based on where my program's at. So as long as we're focusing on what we're doing at Louisville, like, I've been in coaching long enough that there's always been other schools that you could spend your time talking about, like, oh, they're doing it this way, or oh, they're trying that way. But the longer you do that, you know, the less you're focusing on your progress, right? And yeah, your progress stops moving. So very similar to all the different things we faced throughout the years. It's just like, we're just focusing on doing as best we can with Louisville. And you know, that's been enough to this point. It feels like it'll be enough moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And I love what you said too, about just how much time and how much hustle that it takes for these athletes to even put themselves out on social media too. And I think that that's what so many people lose sight of, is that they see these athletes gain these followers and gain like this viewership and everything like that, but they don't see, one, how much that is able to help the university and the sport too, how much that player is impacting so much of it, and two, how much time that player is even putting into it too. I mean, I can even talk about how whenever y'all were in y'all's NCAA tournament, how you said Alexa would be working on her like YouTube channel, and like that takes
constant
time.
Grinding. We're on the road, she's on her laptop doing her YouTube.
And I feel like that's what like the people don't see, is they're like, it's more of like the behind the scenes of it, because they just see, you know, like these followers and like these viewers come in, but they don't see that it actually
takes a while. The consistency of it that takes a while. There's a few, and I feel like people have a tendency to gravitate towards like the overnight success. That's like, oh my God, they went from zero to 100,000 followers. That's so easy because they're famous, or because they had this one thing go viral. Mm-hmm. And that's really just not been the case with anybody that I've seen within our program, within my own social media and all that. It's just like, everybody just stays, anybody wants to grow, stays consistent with it. They provide value. And that's the other thing that we run into locally as well, is like, you know, there's a lot of companies that want to work with athletes, but they also want the athletes to show some value. If you have, you know, 15 followers on Twitter or X now, and you have, you know, 1,000 on Instagram, and you never post, like, nobody's lining up to give you an idea
It's like, what value are you going to be able to give them too?
Yeah, it's almost like you have to create the value before that. And
love that.
I've heard that. I don't remember which of our athletes was doing that, but was like, you know, if they didn't have a sponsorship with somebody, they would already just start posting about them, because it's like, well, I'm going to show them the value that I can get. And then it's kind of, again, chicken or
the sorry.
Oh, it's like the chicken or the egg. It's like, which comes first? It's like, just act as if you already have this, and then show them the value, and then you'll get it. So
I love that. It's kind of like the law of assumption even. It's like,
there you go.
If you like assume that it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And it's like, you almost have to just act that way. You almost have to just like live out the life that you've already got it before it even happens.
It's crazy how well that works. It's really hard though, because it's hard to commit, because when it gets hard, it's super easy to drop it. You know,
it's super easy to drop it. And I think that that's whenever people lose it too, because it's like they're so close to it, and then it's, they see that challenge, or they see the drop off, or it's like they see the adversity, and then it's like, instead of trying to pivot and figure out a new way to make it successful, they just are like, oh, like, it's not for me.
What I see a lot with our athletes too, and like especially with the younger players, you'll ask a younger player, you'll say, yo, what's your goal? Well, obviously I want to win a national championship. And you have to like correct that language and be like, the way you're saying it is making it less of a statement. Like, I want to win a national championship is a lot different than, well, obviously I want to win a national championship. It's like, if you really want that to be a goal, you need to kind of say it the way that you want to have it be done. Same thing, like, well, it'd be great to be an All-American. It's like, you have a goal to be an All-American, or would it be great if I could kind of talk about maybe the fact that I kind of want to be an All-American? Because you're kind of getting yourself out. And that's what's hard. It's like, when you say it out loud, and especially when you say it out loud to a person, now we've got this bond and we've got this kind of commitment to each other. It's a lot easier to kind of give yourself that little out. And it could just be one word. Obviously, I want to be an All-American. It's like, you know, you would know that. I'm not saying it. You would know.
Right. It's like, no, I am going to.
Yeah. And correcting that language and like really committing to it is the really hard part. And that can be a starter. That can be, you know, be on that team. Where it might be. It doesn't have to be this crazy goal. It can be a small one. But if you give yourself that out, it makes it a lot easier to drop it.
I love that too. Because even I feel like subconsciously, it's like we maybe won't even be like aware of like what we're saying, but it really does impact what we think that we're going to receive out of it.
It oozes out of us. That's there's this book called Difficult Conversations that really helped me in coaching. And it talked about picking up on nuances of like what's really important to people in conversation, because they'll say certain things, but there's little tells of like what they're actually kind of getting at. And to me, that's a lot. We talked about culture earlier. I think correcting language is a thing that we do that's pretty unique. We talk about before every single match, I ask every player, tell me one thing you're focused on for the match. And when they get to Louisville, a lot of them will struggle with, they'll say, I'm not going to get faked out on the block, or I'm not going to miss my serve, or I'm not going to hit in whatever. And we'll correct all that language and be like, no, tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what you're going to do.
Decide what you're not going to do.
Yeah. And so it's very hard for athletes sometimes because they are focused. They've been kind of, a lot of athletes throughout their career, that they've been corrected. So it's like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this, as opposed to like, I'm going to go up and I'm going to be courageous and hit deep corner. I'm going to make sure that I angle my hands on my block, or I'm going to, you know, just tell me what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You'd be shocked how many players struggle with being able to tell you actionable things as opposed to things they're trying to avoid. Mm. It's a very reactive mindset.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. So we talk about culture, I think, too, back on that question, correct language a lot. Like how we talk is kind of how we see the world.
Huge. It's so important too. And I think especially just within sports too, because if you tell yourself that you are going to do something versus telling your body that you're not going to do something, whenever you go up to make that block move or to go and make your server, like whatever it may be, your body's going to follow your mind's intent behind it, you know? So it's like if you go into it thinking about not doing something, your body's not going to do something, you know? Or it's like it's not going to have the confidence and that drive to be able just to go for it, you know? That's huge. I love that. Love that.
About the transfer portal,
Portal.
The portal, we know it's a huge, huge thing now. I feel like throughout the last couple years, it has even grown. I mean, I'm a portal kid.
I know, Aaron, you're at this story. So, like, we see all these players go on the portal, but you were at A&M.
Yes.
And then you went to Washington State, who was top 10 that year. I'm always curious this, and I ask when we talk to kids in the portal, but I'm always curious this too. Like, what is that first day like after you get in the portal and your phone number's out there? You have to get 100,000 texts. I can't guess what it's like.
That was the most overwhelming day of my life.
How many texts you got?
It was over 55. I know, just because I made sure to clear all my notifications before so that I knew that whenever a day would come up, I would never.
But then how do you prioritize it? And then every single one, I would assume, is just the number. It's not even a name.
And that was the hardest part about it, because it was just all of these random barcodes, these random numbers. And I would literally look and it would be like, I was just getting all these spams outlook. Because I'm like, that was texting me. I'm like, what? He's got my. And even just like the emails behind it too. That was honestly what was so hard for me at first, just because, and then like you even mentioned how you even like prioritize it. Like I went through, because I knew that I wanted to stay in the Power Five conferences just because I love to compete at the highest level if I can. So I went through the Power Five conferences and I chose my top five schools at each conference, and then I would go through those.
So how do you choose that?
And the,
this is a really good insight.
Yeah.
SMU, you're still recruits, but because you almost had to choose that before you even spoke to them. But a little bit's going to be on reputation, or it's going to be on, do you talk to Ron? Do you talk to old club coaches? Do you talk to your current coaches?
Yeah.
Like, how do you whittle that down? Because I've always thought that too. Like, when we recruit, there's players that I've never spoken to that I feel like are almost committed to us before I even speak to them. They kind of know they want to go here.
Yeah.
Whether it's they came to a match or they watch us on social media or whatever, they just know. And it's like, as long as they don't mess it up, they're coming here. Is Hideout Pub with your five without even talking to them?
Yeah, I think there's multiple factors. I think one, Ron, he was like my right hand zone throughout my entire transfer process, because he had known that I wanted to transfer throughout like my first year at A&M, and he actually encouraged me to do it that first year. But I stayed out the second year too. And then, so whenever I put my name into the transfer portal, he would tell me like the programs or like the coaches where he would think that I would like do well within, because he like knows like how to play, and it's like he knows like how the coaches like to, you know, coach their teams, and just like, and it's like the different cultures and anything like that. So he like, I would give him like my five schools out of each conference, and then he would be like, yes, reach out to them. Like he would kind of just give me his insight through there. And then I would also go through their rosters and kind of see, you know, like how many DSs do they have, company members do they have, and actually to see if one of it's even realistic. You know, like if I see a team that has five different liberos and they're all between like sophomores and juniors or something like that, I'm going to be like, okay, like how likely am I going to be able to get a response? Like I still would respond to them, but it was, I think the factors were one, the reality of me actually being able to like go on their team and play. Two, using my resources like Ron, just because he knows every single coach in America. It seems like it's crazy. And then three, kind of just like my research. Like I would go on like their social media pages and just kind of either see like how they would present their athletes or how like during like the small little, which like this seems so silly, but during like the reels and stuff like that, even just like how they, like if I could see like the videos of how like their coach or even talking with their player, because that was something that I knew was make or break for me, was having the coach to player connection. Like that was something throughout Kiva I had always had and I had always valued so much, because like I was the type of player where I just wanted to constantly get better. Like I never thought that what I was doing was like my fullest potential almost. And so then I was like, I got to college and at A&N, that was whenever I just felt like my game just becomes stagnant. And then I was like, okay, like I need to make sure that my coaches are going to invest in me as much as I know that I'm going to invest in this program too. So that was kind of where I just like to kind of break it down and see how their coaches were, you know, talking to their players and how they even showcased their.
So I could hear Atlantis forever. I'll have one more question.
What's
a conversation that sticks out that like really raised a stock of a program or what? What sticks out is one that like other stock really plummeted.
Yeah.
Because I always think these now recruiting's done on Zoom. So these Zooms are really important. It's like for us, we have our entire staff on there. You know, me as the head coach now, I feel like I suck up all the air in the room. Sometimes I'm talking too much because it's like, hey, you're a middle. You're going to be talking with Parker way more than me.
Right.
So it's like, got to make sure that we all kind of balance this. But I'm always curious on these Zooms. Like you have to have one that was like great or one that sticks out that was like, dude, this was like, well, there you go. You don't have to throw anybody behind the bus or anything, but I'm curious what happened.
Yeah. So we'll start with the one that was good. So I had gotten on the phone, and by then too, it was honestly crazy just how my recruiting process was different from me coming out of high school versus me being in college too, because I found myself going into the calls with questions that were more direct.
Yes, you knew what you were looking for.
Exactly. So that also helped. But I think just their response to it was crucial. Like I would ask them like, okay, like what is your theory behind like if one of your players is starting to struggle or something, how would you handle that situation? And I think their response was make or break. Like there was one that specifically stuck out, and this coach, he was basically saying that he was just telling him like about his culture, and he was saying that he lives this culture based on just being like as selfless as you can. And but like more importantly, he was just saying that he invested in the player, kind of like, or sorry, not the player, but the person besides the player. And that was something that was huge for me, because I knew that if I had a coach who invested in who I was as a person rather than the player, that was going to make my physical skill sets skyrocket, right? But it was kind of going back to like the feeling free. Like at A&M, I honestly, like, I just never felt free playing. Like, I just felt like I was constantly focusing on, like, what I could do better, or, like, what I needed to, like, correct or something like that. But it was, like, whenever I was actually playing, I just felt so tight almost. And that's where it was, like, I knew how I played my best, and that was to play free and to be in that flow state. But in order to do that, I had to trust my coaching staff as well as they had to be able to trust me, too. And so then I sat down with this one coach specifically, and I had told him like how I was feeling, and I was like, I love to play free, I love to feel free, but I also love to learn too. Like if I'm doing something wrong, like I don't want you to be afraid to correct me, but I want it to be more like a sit down conversation than you pretending like you're almost like better than me in that sense too, you know? Because like I was a firm believer too that there can, like, yes, there should be feedback and there should be corrections and everything like that, but I think it can be more of like a conversation base rather than like an attack base at your character too. And that was something that was really, really apparent to me. And I think the biggest thing that I saw throughout that one coach that stood out was how he talked about his players. He put so much value in his player versus who he was as a coach. And that was, I think, the biggest things that told me basically all the things I needed to know. Because anytime that I would ask him about why he thought that he could make his program successful, or why he thought that he could make me successful, or how we thought that his culture was living out a very like selfless culture for his teams, it always went back to his teams. It was always to make his teams better, to make his players better, to make them better people leaving that program. And I mean, I had conversation with coaches, and it was literally all about, and it was like all about stats, and it was all about numbers, and it was all about like, it just felt more for show than actually caring about what I actually needed at that time, too, you know?
I switched gears, which is the one that sticks out that was like, oh, man.
There was this one specific one. I literally, and like, I'm with the type two where like, my face will say it all sometime. Like, it's bad. And I was actually on a visit. This was an in-person visit. Because this was also at the time where it was COVID. So it was like, we would have like one conversation. And then like, if they have like a weekend with like no one on the campus, they would be like, all right, Carly, come on, come quick.
You're
great. So I had went there. We had just an email, and they were like, okay, come on to our campus. We're going to show you around, all of that good stuff. So I got on there. The first moment, we started off in the coach's like room and like the coach's office. And I had sat down. I was asking him like the questions of like, how is like your team culture? How would you describe your relationship with your players? And I was like, how? And then like one question that I always like to ask was, how often do your players come into your office? Because especially at A&M, like there was no one that ever would expect the coach's office. Yeah. But it was like at Washington State, we all went in there, you know. And I think that just goes to show how comfortable that connection is too between the player and coach's relationship. And so that was one of the questions I asked, and he literally looked me in my eyes, and he was like, no one ever comes in this office. And I was like, okay, sounds good. And then I was like, all right, well then like, how do you tend to like what's like the deciding factor for someone to call into like your team? And he goes, well, it really depends on how well they're passing, I guess. Like, how well their stats show. And I was like, so do you face that off of like the whole year or not? And he was like, well, if you could just send me your stats from the past like 4 months. I was like, well, like, what is your theory right now? I was like, what are you talking about? And then like, I just remember my face was like,
that's tough in person.
It was like, you're this, there. Exactly.
All right, now you gotta go.
Now you gotta go see this, exactly. And then it was so funny because I had my mom with me, and she was sitting like next to me, and she just knows me so well. And I was literally like, huh? And she was like, hurry. She was like, your face. I was like, okay. Like, okay. Needless to say that, not the matter.
No.
But I think just the most important thing, at least for me being in the recruiter's shoes, is just showing them what you view for your players. You know, like that you can talk so much about the success of your program and the success and like where you see them, but if they don't see the work that you're doing right now for your team, I think that's going to hold the most weight, at least for players.
You guys try to be super authentic. That's the biggest thing. It's like, you know, and people ask about our culture constantly, or how do you describe your culture to recruits? And it's just like, we don't have words on the, like, can't put authentic on the wall and be authentic.
Right.
If that's the least authentic thing you can do. Put the word authentic on the wall, you just have to live it every day.
Exactly.
But if you don't, people will call you out on that.
So I don't know, that's my big thing on culture too, is like, it's really hard to like put words on the wall.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm not a big fan of the words on the wall.
I might either. And that was one thing too, kind of just what you said of just like about being honest and anything too, that was one thing that I would always go into those conversations with, because I was like, I've seen the BS with it, you know. It's like, I've heard and seen coaches try to sugarcoat things and not, and then I was like, just give it to me straight. Like, I just want you to be honest, be transparent. Like, where it's like, where you see me fitting into your program, just tell me so that I'm not blindsided, stuff like that. And then that would honestly be crazy, because they would tell me one thing, and then I would go and talk to some of like the girls in their sleeves. Yours would be completely different. Yeah. And then I'd be like, what is going on here? And that is the biggest red flag.
We only take like one transfer a year, maybe. Like, we don't really hit the portal too hard, but it's always a good compliment to your team. But the transfer process with the recruits, I personally like more, because they know, like you said, they know exactly what they want. And they know, like, if you go one place that they're like, no, I'm not looking for that, it's like, okay, great. Like, a fast no is way better than, like, you know, oh, so close, but no. Like, exactly. It's just like,
let's say no right away.
Wasting your time.
Yeah, it's just like almost better, where you know, if you're doing it the first time as an undergrad, you still know.
100%. And that's where I think just going into it with more intent behind it. Because I felt like whenever I was being recruited at high school, I was honestly just so freaking overwhelmed. Like, I was like, I just want to get this
over. Your I guess, to compare it to.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And I was also just like, all that I had to compare it to was just what I was hearing from everyone else, you know? And I can bet that pulled away from what I actually knew that I wanted. And I wish that I was more intentional whenever I was first recruiting high school. Kevin, I've not changed anything because it brought me where I was today too, which was fantastic. But I definitely think that for the people who are being recruited and for the coaches and for the coaches in general too, I think one, just being super transparent, being super open, and also just knowing what you want and standing by it too. You know, like, I have so much more respect for the players and even the coaches too, who know exactly what they want and stand on it, rather than try to like play with your own time too. And they're like, well, we could use a middle, or we could use the bear, like we get, it's like, no, it just tell me, you know, it's like, we're all people totally. Just tell me. Look, hold on. I was going to do one more. Ooh, okay. I'm going to do that in the way, I promise. But do you have like a funny moment or like a most memorable moment that you have in your career? I'm sure that there's tons, but is there one specifically that sticks out where you are just like, this is why I do this?
Oh man, there are a ton. Gosh, this is not like a big, like, oh, this is the top. This is just a very random one that I feel like there's like 200 of these, but it's actually when Todd Chamberlain had his first baby. This was in 2021. So 2021 is definitely like that's like a hallmark year for me because we went undefeated. Louisville was not a traditional top 10 even team at the time. I think we started the year at like 12, ended the year undefeated, number one. But what people don't realize if you're not on that journey is like at the beginning of the year, you don't know that. You don't know you're going to be the best team in the country or the undefeated team or whatever. You just know you're pretty good and you feel like we have a chance to beat the teams we're going to play. So we go through, and I think the first weekend, we go 5 with Arizona State at their place, barely beat them. And we're like, okay, we can get a lot better. Then we go through the next 3 weeks and we go undefeated, but we didn't play anybody really top 25. And then we had a gauntlet. We had Purdue, who we had never beaten at the time. We had played them every year since I got here in 2017.
It'd be crazy to think that there was a time whenever you don't.
It's crazy. We had Kentucky and then we had Nebraska back to back to back. And I talked earlier about Amaya and this Nebraska. Pretty sure it's the same match. So we go, man, if we go 2 out of 3 in these, we're in jack. Like, what a year. If we go 1 out of 3, that would be great. So we played Kentucky first. We also had never beaten Kentucky since I had been here in 2017.
It's crazy.
We play. We beat them in 5. It's like, oh, my gosh. So, you know, we're playing with house money after that. We already have the one. And then we play Purdue. And the Purdue is the moment that I'm gonna talk about. So we play Purdue, and Todd had his first baby that weekend, so he didn't come on road with us. And I don't know why this sticks out. It's a funny moment. So we beat Purdue. We beat them in 3. And again, we hadn't beaten them yet. It was just a huge monkey on our shoulder.
Crazy. Beat them in a sweet dude.
Yeah. And so Anna Stevenson, I remember, had like 9 kills in one set. And one set is a middle. And so we're feeling on top of the world. And so we go to the locker room. And at the time, we had this player on the team. You know Rachel DeMarcus? We called her Big Rach. We called her Big Kahuna. She was like the leader of the pack. But she is an absolute gem. And we get done, and we're FaceTiming Todd. Todd, we beat Purdue. And Todd and Big Rach had like this hilarious relationship where they just like always made fun of each other. And like it pans to her, and she goes, and no one misses you, Todd. But it was like the funniest thing because it's like Todd is such a huge part of the program, all that. They just get at each other nonstop, and it just tore the whole world. But it was like we had this year where it was like we went undefeated. We competed so hard, but we never lost like the fun. Like we were always jabbing each other. And I don't know, you bring out like a funny moment. I was cool because like we couldn't have been any higher there. And then we had this like hilarious moment where like Big Rage kept it real. It was so funny.
Leap it up in Big Rage too. No, she is awesome.
She's such a stud. So like through the years, I feel like there's like hundreds of like little moments like that where there's very few that are like these huge moments where it's just like, oh, I remember it was so impactful. I do remember after we beat Nebraska because I spent so much time there. That was one of like 2 times that I like, cried and like,
oh, yeah.
Because I was just like, man, like the team knew because it was Nebraska, the EL Bard that was. But I was like, I've been on another bench and watched so many teams flooded away just because it's Nebraska. It's the big crowd or whatever. And that they just like full throttle. never let up and beat him. And I was like, you guys have no idea how hard it is.
It was like a full circle moment probably for you.
It was. I already spent so much time there.
Right, because you know how much it has to take to be able to beat them.
I already did sick do that. And so that was a cool moment.
Oh, that's so cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it was a fun season. So.
And I could get so cool whenever you do look back at those experiences because it really comes down to those small moments, you know? I feel like you had these great, huge wins that the people see, but it's like what makes those great wins so valuable is those small moments that you have with your team, with your coaches. It just makes it so special. That's all stuff. Dan, thank you so much for being a part. This was awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Rapper. Of course. And thank you all so much for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and I'll see y'all next Sunday on Simply You. Be here, be real, be you. Thank you, guys.